soft skills isn't talking about the complexity of it. We're not talking about the degree of difficulty when we talk about it, because that's what they say. It's like, oh, it's not soft, it's the hardest thing to do. It's like, no, you're getting it wrong. It was never a descriptor of degree of difficulty. It's purely about the interaction. And when we talk about interaction, I think soft skill is a very appropriate term because it is soft. It softens us. It softens how we interact with the world.
Welcome to the pod, episode 212. Times that I've had to be forced to speak to Eric. It's been an incredible journey. No, I'm just kidding. It's wonderful. Welcome back to the Expansive Podcast. My name is John Sonne. I'm a keynote speaker and author, and I research neuroscience and technology. And I'm always joined by my co-pilot, Eric, who is also a keynote speaker and an author. His focus is on leadership and team development. And every week we come together to share with you the latest research around how to live a more expansive life, both in your business and in your personal life. And we have a humdinger episode with you today. Looking forward to bringing it forward. But before we do, let's just check in with my co-pilot there in the south of Cape Town.
Yep.
How are you, Eric?
I think you missed an opportunity to go, he's a keynote speaker and author, I'm a keynote speaker and author, but when we join forces, we become the masters of change.
Oh my God. We should put our rings together and become exactly. One of those superheroes that become those
Planet,
rings.
Captain Planet, I think. Well, yeah.
Captain Planet? What the hell is that?
Wasn't that the show? I think that was the show's name. Captain Planet. And then they put their ring.
We come from different generations.
Are you thinking about the one where like earth, fire, wind? Are you thinking about that one?
I think that one, but my favorite one was to the powers of the universe, Grayskull. Who was that?
That's He-Man.
Who was that?
That's He-Man.
He-Man. That's He-Man. Yeah. Anyway, right. Welcome, Eric.
Yeah.
This is a business podcast.
Business podcast.
Let's get serious. You good?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm on my way. I'm packing to go to Peru. I'm looking forward to it, a week in South America. The thing with traveling to South America, which is always an awesome thing, is by the time your jet lag sorts itself out, you're on the plane on the way back. So the next 10 days are going to be fun, you know, just like waking up at 2 a.m, falling asleep at 3 p.m. You don't know why when it's going on, but all good, my man. How are you?
Yeah, good. Lots of writing and course development actually for the week ahead. So yeah, looking forward to that. And then actually the bigger thing is Danishka's birthday tomorrow. So have to play good husband tomorrow.
Ooh. For a change.
As a house husband,
what do you do to prepare for your, and you also said a full name. Are you in trouble? Because I mean usually you call it dad. Like you have to say the full name.
Well, no, Danishka is even more endearing than that. Because her name is...
Oh, is it endearing?
Danika is the name. Okay. Dan is the shortened version.
Danica,
and then
yes.
Danishka is the endearing one.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, we went there today. So it's the endearing one today. Okay. Well, happy birthday, Danishka. I hope you have a fantastic... You are a lucky lady having Eric as your hubby, and he's a lucky man to have you. You guys make a great couple. And my favorite thing about both of you is that you love your dogs more than life. So you both.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Before we get into the pod, we just want to give a big shout out to Angola and Mauritius. We're in the top 10 out there in Angola. Tashbo, Tashbopa. And in Mauritius, bonjour. Très bien, merci beaucoup that you are listening to our pod. Wonderful to have you here. But before we get into today's pod, which is all about soft skills, which I kind of call core skills, but, you know, they're known as soft skills and we know them, but the big thing today is really about what they are and how do you implement them. And I think that's the really biggest thing. But before we do that, we want to get into expansive insights and just round up the latest information around AI and what's going on out there. And the big story that's actually come out this week is OpenAI doing a partnership with Reddit. If you don't know what Reddit is, it's this incredible platform that's user-generated where you can ask any question and you have people from all around the world coming and giving you answers. It's very up-to-date. I don't know if everything's true on Reddit, but what we are realizing is that these AI systems require an incredible amount of data and they're super data hungry. And the fact that they've plugged into Reddit is a really, really important thing for them, because on the other side of it, what you have is you have Elon Musk and Grok plugging into Twitter, which is also daily uploaded information. So what's going to be happening with this sort of OpenAI Reddit combination is they're going to have up-to-date information that is not like dated back to 2021 or 2022 like their systems always had. So really, I mean, it's a very, very exciting thing watching all of these things happen right in front of our eyes, because this is the beginnings of all these data machines coming together to give us very unique types of AI. They're all going to be very, very unique and have their own very clear personality and sort of clear output. And we are all seeing the good ones, right? So we see the ones that are like Pi. It's all about empathy. And Elon Musk's Grok is all about truth for humanity, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't know what the undercover people are getting up to. Like, the same technology could be in really dangerous hands. And I can imagine they must be doing some crazy things with them. I'd rather not actually even know. But either way, what are your thoughts, Eric?
Yeah, I think we are kind of squarely in the data has become the next precious metals era, you know. And everyone is trying to get their hands on more data, because the more data you can train your AI on, the better that AI model becomes. And we've seen now people are trying to ring fence it as much as possible. Like, that's why Google had such a big advantage initially, because they have all the websites that could train stuff on. But then, you know, on top of that, it becomes copyright issues and IP issues. And so wherever you can make deals like OpenAI and Reddit, where you can get access to huge amounts of data, it's a massive win for you. And I'm thinking, like, so we have Google that has access to all the Google stuff. Facebook, obviously, Meta has access to Facebook, Instagram. And, like, yeah. they
And WhatsApp,
whoever has the most data wins, right?
WhatsApp, like, exactly.
And Reddit is just a treasure trove of information. And I think, like you were saying, it's user-generated. So there's a lot of stuff happening on there all the time. But it's also, you know, like, Reddit's the water cooler of the internet. It's been that for years and years and years. And so people come and dump their thoughts and their best ideas on there all the time. So I think it's a huge win for OpenAI to have
done
this.
I mean, if you think about the four big ones, what you have is Amazon with all the shopping data, which can make suggestions to you that is just second to none, that is just brilliant.
Yeah.
And then what you have is, you have, like you've just mentioned, you've got these big four and there's no beating them. And the reason is that, I mean, look, these are all American, right? We don't know what the Chinese and Russian and Europeans are up to.
Yes.
But the big four here, they've got the money and they've got the data. You can't actually, how do you beat them? You can't. It's almost an impossibility. The minute you start becoming anything, they'll just buy you because they're just too big. So it is quite a thing to be watching happen.
It's also a good reminder that that's ultimately what we want as well for consumers of artificial intelligence, is that you want to be using models that are as extensively trained on your context and your data as possible. And so that's going to be, you know, I saw the other day that, you know, you could have an AI trained on your data, and it was very expensive to have that sort of bespoke created, you know, to do that. But then lots of things like at the moment, OpenAI saves memories. Like, when you tell it, you know, I'm a keynote speaker, it saves that as a memory. So, like, now over time, it's just saving more and more context on you, more and more data on you. And therefore, it becomes a lot more effective, a lot more personalized. So data really is the big thing for big organizations, but it's also the big thing for us, even in our lives, our daily lives.
Well, look, I mean, you have these large language models, but you also have small language models, which are your more personal things. So, like, I've also, like, kind of costed to make an AI John, but it's very expensive right now. But that's a small language model, where you don't have to go. So you'll have all these ranges of language models that are going to be sort of inputting. But I think the king, I mean, I don't even know what the king is, because Elon Musk has got all the petabytes of data coming from the cars. I mean, I don't know. Okay, but I mean, like, let's get on to the next story.
I don't think that's as powerful. I don't think that's as powerful as Reddit and Google.
No, that's a different power.
What do you have? You have travel data.
No, but that's street data. That's in your physical life that can help you.
Yeah.
Where this is just intellectual. I don't think anybody's got an amount of physical street city data like Musk does, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just...
What was the... Can you remember the cost for building your own John AI?
I didn't get a cost because the guy started off with, it's going to be super expensive. I was like, okay, let's just hold it for a bit.
Okay.
It's not a priority. It's not a priority. It's like, okay, hold. We'll wait for it. Look, it's just a matter of time. Next time you sign up with Vodacom to sign up for a contract, they'll give you 12 data centers to want to go and set up your own little, you know, that's how tech works. So it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
The second story that I think is really impressive is a company called DeepL, a German startup that's focused on translation. And they've just raised $300 million, making them a $2 billion valuation company out of Germany. And that's really awesome. I love the fact that Germany is creating innovative businesses because, you know, they've peaked already. For them to be playing now in this space is really wonderful. So congratulations to them. But what they are doing is making translation for business documentation, you know, making translation for menus and, you know, the arbitrary things. I went on a date once when I was in Peru last time in 2017 with a girl I met, and we did everything on Google Translate. I mean, it was very exciting for the first 12 minutes. After that, it was boring. So, you know, it's great that they're doing this. But you know what? The one worry I have about you creating an AI business, it's a very scary time because, you know, OpenAI can just switch something on. Somebody can switch something on. Mm. And was it you who were saying that it will just bulldoze you? I mean, just be careful for sure. Because it's like, it's a tough place to be starting up a business with AI because, oh, you know, one little feature switch on by one of them and your business is gone.
Mm. It's a GPT. It's just a GPT add-on. And all of a sudden, your entire business that you built was just consumed by their little like GPT add-on. That's it.
My little box that just ticked to say, okay, yeah, we're just going to do this quickly. And your whole life savings and your whole life dreams are gone. They're like, it's just small. It's tough place to be.
I think what's going to happen is that, you know, you need to provide so much value in what you are doing that it just becomes very natural to use you versus having to go through OpenAI, the directory to get to the thing. And translation is obviously a huge one, hey? Like Samsung, they debuted their AI translator. Well, it's pretty amazing, right? Like, so how theirs work is that it happens in the cloud. So even if you don't have a Samsung device, I can call you as their translator. It happens in the cloud. It'll translate to your language. It'll listen to you, translate back to me. So it's a lot more seamless than what your experience was like because they can do it real time.
Of course. That was very clunky.
Yeah, but there's still a lot. But dude, again, can you imagine traveling in a few years' time and you can speak fluently to everyone?
Yeah. I'm going to Japan next year. And I was thinking that I don't need to have a translator with me now because I'm going with earphones. By then, you'll have earphones, There will be fantastic. Eh? Look, do you think the technology will ever get there for us to understand woman fully? Do you think, you know, that language? I mean, I'm trying to figure out if we still, like, I don't know if I'll ever get that. You know, maybe my IQ is a bit low.
Listen,
but
I'm
hoping the technology gets there one day.
Everything
we need
has
super artificial
dude.
Intelligence.
Everything has its limits.
exactly. Miracles. Yeah. Okay, so the third thing that we want to talk about before we get into today's topic is Dr. Joe Dispenza has just brought out a document called Source, It's Within You. And he's now bringing about all the science that's backing his theories that he's been sort of speaking about for the last 20, 30 years. And scientists have been calling him a pseudoscientist, they've been calling him crazy and all that sort of stuff. And now, after 20 years of work, he's got scientists from the San Diego University and everybody now publishing sort of in Nature magazine, the repercussions and the ripple effects of meditation the way he does it. And so congratulations to him because I have seen him frustrated with the fact that people don't believe what he's saying just because it doesn't fit into an old paradigm of thinking. And it's the same thing with Terrence Howard. You know, Terrence Howard coming on Joe Rogan, people are breaking him down. Why? Because it doesn't fit into the existing paradigm. So people are defending a paradigm. And Joe Dispenza is the same, except Terrence Howard is brand new. He's just come off the bench. Whereas Joe Dispenza has been at this. So the source within, and I think, not think, but I mean, because I've been to so many, what he says in some of the talks is that when you are able to manage your consciousness, you have the most advanced pharmaceutical manufacturing system inside your body. Your body knows exactly what it needs, how much of it needs, when you're able to put yourself into the state that's one of actually accessing a deeper version of yourself. And so very exciting time for us to see this incredible new intelligence grow with us, but also at the same time, to start to understand deeper layers of who we are, what we're about, and what our powers are. So bravo to Dr. Joe.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think, you know, I've introduced people, many people over the years to meditation, but the easiest has been just to go, here's a Dr. Joe meditation. Like, that's where you start. Just like bypass everything else. Go straight to him. He's your source for this. And so he's made my life easier in helping people also just latch onto like some incredible ways of thinking.
It is the easiest though, you know? I mean, it is the
easiest
way.
It is by far
the easiest. Just sit there and listen. Just sit there and listen. That's all you have to do, you know? It's a simple process.
The only challenge is, and I remember this when I just started listening to him, the first time I listened to Dr. Joe meditation and he goes, eyes glow. Like, I was like, I can't listen to this. Like, it's too weird. Because he does these weird things with his voice. And then once you've listened to it for a few times, it's almost like if you don't hear that sort of tonality, then it's weird. Like, the meditation almost sounds too flat for me. So then now that I've...
Well, that's exactly what he's doing. His voice is putting you into a wave.
Yes.
Yeah, remember. So he's like, he's actually putting you into a hypnosis.
Very smart. Know? Yes.
Let's get on to today's pod. And today we're talking all about soft skills, one of your specialities, Eric. So lead the way, my friend.
Yeah. So let me create a bit of a frame for this. Have you ever heard of the Luddites?
Yes, of course.
Can you tell me about the Luddites?
The people that went around. Are you testing me, bro?
No.
What is this? Is this an exam? In fact, they're called the Luddites. But anyway, I'll just keep with your Luddites. But because it's posh. Can we get the Luddites? So the Luddites were there at the turn of the Industrial Revolution. They were very, very upset that tractors and factories were taking their jobs. So they were going around. They were from Birmingham, actually. And they went around burning factories, breaking tractors, just like what most people do when jobs start getting taken away. Instead of doing the intelligent thing and adapting, we will fight for familiarity. What a ridiculous notion.
I'm so happy that you passed the test, especially as a futurist.
Thank you very much. So glad I came prepared.
Yeah. So Luddites. They were called after Ned Ludd, who was the leader of the movement. And exactly to your point, new technology came along in the form of mechanized looms and knitting frames. And they were unhappy about this, broke into factories, destroyed factories, destroyed the technology. And despite this, of course, what we know is that technology marched on, you know.
And what
the world learned in the process is that when technology is introduced, yes, it destroys jobs, but it also creates new jobs. And what we also learned is that you can stop many things, but you can't stop progress. And so we are, of course, like in right now, we are in a Luddite moment as well, where we have this with artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence is going to destroy jobs, but it's also going to create many new jobs. And we know that just from the conversations we have every day, people are very worried about what's going to happen to their jobs. So inevitably, two things happen. One is that the industry itself creates new jobs. And there are three classes of jobs that are being birthed at the moment. The one is trainers, the other is explainers, and the other is sustainers. So trainers are the people who are currently busy developing artificial intelligence. So these are the guys who are training all the AI models with all the data, and we just spoke about this. Next are the explainers, and the explainers are people who give the public access to artificial intelligence. So this would be someone like Jasper, for example, who takes OpenAI's model, but they skin it in a different way to make it easier for you to interact with it. So because you can't just, you know, jump into artificial intelligence without the like know-how behind it, they need to make it accessible for you. And that's what the explainers do. They make it accessible. And then finally, we have the sustainers. And the sustainers are people who keep artificial intelligence top of mind. They educate. They are content creators. They are creators. They are ethicists. And they make sure that the narrative of AI keeps going, that they keep bringing people into the ecosystem, that they keep educating and making sure people understand what's happening in the world around them. So this is obvious, you know, like in artificial intelligence, if you go and look at, you know, new jobs that have been created, you'll find plenty of new jobs all of a sudden on the horizon. But then outside of this, there are also new jobs that are going to be created. We don't necessarily know what they are yet. But one thing that we do know is that Deloitte has said that in the next couple of years, so by 2030, soft skill intensive occupations will have grown 2.5 times compared to other fields and other jobs. And they will account for 2/3 of all jobs. And so soft skills become a really important thing in the age of AI. And there's this great bit of like a summary that I found that said, a growing body of work emphasizes the importance of non-cognitive or soft skills like patience, self-control, conscientiousness, teamwork, and critical thinking. While such skills are clearly important, the very terms soft and non-cognitive reveal our lack of understanding about what these skills are and how to measure or develop them. In my view, the appropriate term for capacities like problem solving, critical thinking, and teamwork is higher order skills. Now, I get that people want to rebrand it, but I want to just remind people where the idea of soft skills came from. It came from the military in the 1960s. And what happened was that the military was great at training people to excel in the technical work that they need to do. But they realized that that wasn't enough, that if they wanted to build strong armies, if they wanted to have good teams, then they also needed to train people on things like leadership and teamwork and communication. And so they wanted to find a way to differentiate between technical and non-technical skills. And that became soft skills, which is our interaction with human beings, and hard skills, which is our interaction with machines. And so I always say that I think it's actually a perfect way of describing it, because I was listening to Simon Sinek the other day and he was saying like, oh, but there's nothing soft about it. I'm like, but you don't get it. Soft skills isn't talking about the complexity of it. We're not talking about the degree of difficulty when we talk about it, because that's what they say. It's like, oh, it's not soft. It's the hardest thing to do. It's like, no, you're getting it wrong. It was never a descriptor of degree of difficulty. It's purely about the interaction. And when we talk about interaction, I think soft skill is a very appropriate term because it is soft. It softens us. It softens how we interact with the world. So yes, I think I don't feel it needs a rebrand. I think, yes, we can put some more emphasis on it and the importance of it. But I think ultimately that is what we want, is we want people to become softer in their approach with others. And so, of course, what we then realize is that there are certain skills we'll need for the future. There are many. I've captured 5 very quickly that I think we can go through. But I'll just pause here for a second to hear where you are at and what your thoughts are.
There was one comment that you made there about self-control, and it was one of the things that you needed to do around soft skills. And I would change self-control to self-awareness, because I think the idea of control goes to the point where I must control my emotions, which actually is a time bomb waiting to take off. The self-awareness around your triggers changes the tonality. So that was the only thing that you said that I was like, I think that word could be a little bit lighter. So like it's also, I think we should do a pod on stoicism and the idea of stoicism and also the idea that seeps into the self-control idea. And I disagree with it in many ways. You know, I think what's happened is that we control it here, but it seeps out somewhere else. One of my best friends, he's the kindest, most beautiful man until he's driving. He's an animal when he's driving. I can't actually be in the car with him. He's disgusting. And what has happened and what I can only determine is that he channels all the anger that he has ignored and subdued and controlled. Now he has to somewhere to let it out. In fact, if he just had the boundaries and he was more self-aware, maybe he wouldn't have to take it out on the people in the traffic, you know? So I think self-control could be self-awareness. But yes, I love what you said about soft skills. I mean, I've always called them core skills because they really are at the core of what humans are. Because you're describing wisdom in many ways, which is such an important thing that all of us need to develop. So yes, I love the connotation of hard and soft. And in fact, you've changed my mind around it. So soft skills it is.
Mm. All right. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that I want us to quickly just chat about. And many of these you would have heard on the pod before because obviously, like everything we really talk about on the pod is how do we develop our thinking? How do we develop our feeling to be more relevant in today's society and for the future and for living and being more expansive? So the very first soft skill, and again, I've kind of just picked a few that I feel are important for us to chat about. There are obviously many more. And many of them can be summarized into maybe just one or two soft skills, but I want to take us through a few. So the first one is creativity. And I specifically chose creativity because I think it's one of those skills that people often feel excluded from. That if you aren't self-identified as someone who is creative with like your art or music or whatever, then you're like, well, you know, that's not, when you talk about creativity, that's not me. When you look at the dictionary definition of creativity, it says it's all about the use of imagination. And we can all use our imagination. And when you think about creativity, you need to apply it a bit more broadly, which is that, can you be creative in how you approach the world and how you solve problems? Can you be creative in how you apply yourself and how you adapt and form your identity around how the world is shifting? So a great example, one that I found that I really loved was that, and this is just an application of creative problem solving, is, you know, when you have a quartz watch, so you have all the different hands on the watch. One specific supplier or manufacturer was wondering, how do they find a way to tell people that the watch battery is going flat? Because obviously if you have an Apple Watch, it's easy to see, you know, that bars are counting down. But how do you tell on a quartz watch if the battery is going flat or not? For most people, what's going to happen is you're going to use it for a while, and then one day you wake up and your battery is flat and it irritates you because now you can't wear it for the day or can't tell time. So they wanted to find a way to just preempt it. But very specifically, they wanted to make sure that it didn't interfere with the actual experience of the watch. So it shouldn't be that you look at it and you go, oh, now it's 2 hours, like, you know, late because it slowed down. So therefore, like, the battery must be going flat. They wanted a way to convey it, but keep it up to date, up to time. And so the very smart thing they did was they delayed the second hand by 4 seconds. And so what would happen is that every 4 seconds, it would just jump 4 seconds ahead, 4 seconds ahead, 4 seconds ahead. And it was just this like very smart way of not letting the watch run flat, but still having a way to communicate to the user that, listen, your battery is slowly busy dying. And so that is a great application for me of creative thinking. And when you go and read up about creative thinking, you'll find that there are actually many books about it, many different sort of exercises you can play to help you stimulate creative thinking, using what if scenarios, trying different contexts, looking at it from different angles, from different points of view, 30,000 foot view, like very zoomed in view. And I think this is what often makes entrepreneurs so good as well, is that when they go and solve problems, they often approach it with a very like naive mindset. You know, they go into like an industry or a field and they don't know much about it, but they're like, I can see this thing, but I'm going to go and solve it in my way. And it's not necessarily the world's way or that industry's way, but they come with it just with like a very different perspective because they haven't been ingrained in that industry for a long time. So that would be the first skill, creativity. Yes, go for it.
So I watched a John Cleese video about creativity, and he said that the key for creativity is very clear that it's got nothing to do with IQ. It's not a cognitive process. It's almost a very different process. And he said that the number one state that you need to put yourself into to be super creative is playfulness. And he says, when you become playful, you're almost like in the state of experimentation, not taking yourself too seriously, connecting dots that otherwise really wouldn't make sense. You're playful. And I think it's in that play that creativity arrives in a more adaptable way, and quite literally allowing the neurons in your brain to fire into places that it wouldn't otherwise have fired because you're so relaxed and because you're so playful. When you're trying to be serious and you're wanting to be creative as well at the same time, it's almost very tough because serious is logic and outcomes and systems. Creative is playful, experimentation, lateral, very different process. So the state of play is a good one to
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And even when you think of like grabbing a book and just going through the exercises that are creative thinking exercises, even that, it's like that's a state of play of saying, let's just see what happens. Let me just go and play with these ideas and these models and these frameworks and let's see where they take me. All right, number two is collaboration. This should be a very obvious one. And in my keynote, I talk about this idea that we have to be a good collaborator, but also a good instigator of collaboration. And the reason why this just is so important is because most of the important and meaningful work that you will do in your life will happen in the context of teams. When I speak to teams about this, I always say that you have to keep in mind that you have two roles that you are playing at the same time. You are always a team member and a team player. A team member is someone who contributes to the goals of the team, whereas a team player is someone who contributes to the team itself. And you need to be good at both of those if you're going to be a good collaborator. So I'll give you a quick example here to make it easy to understand. When I play paddle, when last did you play paddle, by the way? Because we're still waiting for the game to happen. It's still never happened.
I don't play that amateur sport. Paddle? I'm over it. Oh, okay. I've outgrown it.
So when I play paddle, though. So there are these two ways of showing up. The one is, if I'm a good team member while playing, it means that I'm very good at executing at the strategy of the team. So if we decide that we're going to lob one person all the time or we're going to isolate one person, me being able to stick to that makes me a good team member. Me being a good team player is about how I show up for the team. It's like when we make mistakes, do I get frustrated and throw my racket? Do I scold my team, my partner? And it's very possible for you to be a good team member, but not a good team player, or to be a good team player, but not a good team member. Good team member, but bad team player is I'm contributing towards a goal. So I'm sticking to the goals and the strategy that we have. But bad team player is I throw my racket in the air. Like I get frustrated. I don't train. I don't show up as my best to the team. I drink the night before, that kind of thing. Good team player, but bad team member is I show up. I'm like the best partner that you could want because I communicate, I encourage, but when we decide on one thing to do, I do the total opposite. And so it's very possible to have, you know, that sort of dynamic in one person. And so it's very important that if you want to be a better collaborator and you're already part of a team, it's for you to ask yourself, how are you showing up in those two different roles? How are you showing up as a team member and how are you showing up as a team player? And many of the teams that I've worked with where we've run this as a facilitation and we just think about member contribution through that lens, it completely reshapes that team because we start realizing that if you want to be a good team member, how that happens is in the context of the team. We have to work together on being better team members, whereas team player is what you do outside of the team. It is working on patience. It's working on upskilling yourself. It is working on how you communicate so that when you step into the team, you are able to bring the best out of the team.
Very good. I've never heard it been explained like that. And I'm thinking about, yeah, you have to play both roles. That's such a smart way of thinking about it, you know, player and member. So you're a player and a member. Yeah, the member is almost the softer stuff. The player is actually doing the action of what needs to happen. So you need to show up with both. Very good, eh? Wow, I'd never actually thought about it like that. Very good.
Yeah,
very good. I like
it. It kind of dawned on me because I think we talk about being better team players all the time, but within that, you know, there's actually quite a few things that need to happen. And so initially when I did that, I thought the differentiation might be a bit pedantic, but over time, I've realized that people really resonate with the idea and splitting it up and then evaluating how you're actually doing.
It really helps me think about it in different ways, you know? Yeah, very good. Very good. I like that.
All right. Okay. The next one, which I'm going to just sort of gloss over, is adaptability and flexibility. And the reason I'm just going to gloss over it is because I think we covered quite a bit of that last week in the pod. So if you're listening to this one, go back and have a listen to that podcast because we covered quite a few big ideas regarding adaptability. But just a few highlights is flexibility over resilience, to not get stuck in the extraction zone. So I've spoken a few times about this idea between oscillating between exploration and extraction. And very often when we don't become adaptable, it's because we are always just focusing on what's working right now. We're just trying to extract as much value from the present instead of oscillating between trying new things and experimenting and playful curiosity and all of that. So make sure you get that balance right. And then an idea that pairs very well with that is the learning zone and the performance zone. So making sure that you're spending time doing the work that you are good at, but that you also make enough time to step back into a thinking space where you can learn new things about yourself, about the world, and then ultimately execute that back into the performance zone. Again, I'm not going to go into too much detail because I think adaptability is something we've covered so many times.
Look, I call it, it's so funny, I call it exploitation and exploration. You're exploiting an existing system or you're exploring into a new one. And all of it comes down to your brainwaves. When you're too much in a high beta brainwave, you're all into exploitation. You are in that zone that just wants something as quickly as possible. And the minute you change your brainwaves, you move naturally into exploration. So yes, as much as we understand these soft skills, often they're determined by what brainwave and where your nervous system's at. Because you can have all these rules, and if your nervous system is out, you just tap straight into exploitation without even realizing you're doing it. So I like your terminologies there.
Cool. So two more to go. Communication. Again, I think it's quite an obvious one, but it's probably one of the most important ones for us to get right. And it's going to be a very interesting one to circle back to in a few years, because communication is really has a lot to do with empathy. So it has a lot to do with how do we connect to other people through our words, but also how do we connect to them by listening to them very well. And the challenge here is that artificial intelligence is already being infused with empathy. Artificial intelligence is already being infused with emotional intelligence. And so it'll be interesting to come back in a few years and to think about how has that developed. You know, if you are on the call with an AI, are you able to discern between it being a human or it being AI based on having a very deep and meaningful conversation, not just sort of a sales conversation? And so where I think communication is really important is that in many of the teams that I've worked with, I see that we kind of expect people to read our minds. We expect people to be aligned with how we see the world. And usually that's not the case. And we have this sort of attitude that, oh, I shouldn't have to say this or I shouldn't have to say that. And we implicitly feel like people should just be on the same page. So what I think is important to practice as a soft skill from a communication point of view is, number one, we need to practice to be more explicit, that we say the things that need to be said. Often in teams, you have this thing called undiscussables. And the more undiscussables you accumulate in a team, the more dysfunctional the team become. And one of those undiscussables is the things that we think but don't say. And, you know, so you sit there thinking, well, like this direction we're moving in is stupid. We shouldn't be doing that. But you don't verbalize it. You keep quiet. And of course, you know, it means we all move in the wrong direction. Or sometimes it is that we say things, but we don't mean it. So we're like, yes, we love this idea. But when we go out of the meeting and in the hallways, we start talking about these ideas and we're like, well, we actually don't like it. And so to be more explicit with our language means that we speak more directly and we speak more openly. But what that really requires as a meta skill is for each of us to start becoming good at cultivating psychological safety for the people around us. That when we deliver feedback that people might not want to hear, or when we disagree on things, or when there's conflict, that people never feel like they're going to be simply blamed, named, shamed, and ostracized from the group, but that they feel that this is always coming from a place of care and inclusivity and really wanting to see the best for them. So the communication is, you know, it's easy in some ways in that we can create frameworks for how to talk to people. When you go look at storytelling, for example, at the moment, you'll find hundreds of frameworks of how to tell stories. But that's a small part of communication. You know, the how-to is a small part. If you had issues with your team on how to deliver feedback, I guarantee you it's not because of the language that you're choosing, but it's because of what's happening in the relationships for you guys as a team. And so when a team wants to fix feedback, they might go to, well, let's have a framework of situation, behavior, impact. Now I know how to give feedback. You know, this morning in the meeting, when you said, or when you interrupted Josie, then, you know, it made us feel like you undermined their contribution. Cool. That's a framework. It gives you the language. But if there's no psychological safety, if there's no environment where people want this kind of thing to happen, then that framework doesn't matter because we're never going to use that language. And so the communication soft skill is to be able to do both, is to choose your words wisely, to communicate the right kind of things explicitly in a direct and open manner, but to also foster the kind of relationships where people feel cared for, where they feel included, and where they feel like you aren't coming from a place of judgment, but you're creating a safe space for them. And a safe space not being like not being challenged, but just I feel like I'm okay when I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's also like comes from judgment, right? So when you judge somebody, they don't feel like they can say things to you. I remember my mom saying to us when we were much younger that she apologized for making my brother and I liars. And my brother and I are like, what do you mean? He's like, because I wanted the truth, but you couldn't tell me the truth because I wouldn't accept it. So we also have to be okay with whatever anybody's wanting to tell us once we ask them, or just don't ask the question because you don't want to really know the answer. So yeah, it's a huge topic, communicating and doing it clearly and being empathetic and listening. And I mean, it's a huge, huge task. And what I usually do is if I'm not in a good mood or if I'm tired or hungry, I just don't communicate because I know I'm going to ruin everything. Just don't communicate, exit the conversation, say, I'll speak to you later, because I'm just not going to show up the way I want to show up. So again, really comes down to the state that you're managing of yourself in that time. And you remove yourself if you're not in a good state, but also on the other hand, make sure that you put yourself and do the system that allows you to put into a good state so you can communicate like that with clarity and empathy more easily. So I like it.
And that's the meta skill of communication. It's like, it's not the explicit rules for it, but like it's the awareness that comes with it. And I've seen you do it very well, where whether it's like expectation management or just creating it's almost like when you can create a space for experimentation and failure, part of that includes communication as well. You know, it includes how people will speak to you and how you will speak to others. So the meta skill of communication. And then I have one more, which is actually one of my favorite ones. It's a very short one though, is contextualized intelligence. And contextualized intelligence is an artificial intelligence inspired soft skill. So one of the ways that we interact with AI is through symbiosis. And symbiosis is simply that AI is very good with data crunching, so we use it for that. And we are good with intuition. And so when we can bring those two together and blend them together, we get the best of both worlds. We get contextualized intelligence. So what does this look like? It is that you have a artificial intelligence that operates in the healthcare space, that when a patient comes in and is sick, it can analyze all their bloods, all their x-rays, against all the data in the world very quickly and give some sort of a diagnosis or give some treatment plan for moving forward. But ultimately, it's still the doctor who has more context on the individual, more of an understanding of their current situation and intuition to make the final call, to decide what they are going to do, which is the best way forward. Even when you think of the podcast, Robin has to practice contextualized intelligence because we have Riverside that can go and cut out 15, so we record on Riverside for those listening, it can cut out 15 different clips for us from this episode. But it doesn't mean that those clips are the best clips for people to go and listen to because it's simply doing its task of crunching the data, looking at what might be interesting. But contextualized intelligence is going, okay, I see what you've done here. We have an audience that wants this. This is the kind of thing that does well on this platform. And so how do I use this and contextualize it into what I know and what I understand of the world? And so it also kind of plays back into what we were saying a bit earlier, which is that where AI is going is it's going to have more and more context on you. It needs more context. And that's where this data play comes in. And at some point, you'll find that an artificial intelligence is highly contextualized to you. But even in those instances, you will still need to practice your own level of contextualized intelligence, which is to take what the AI gives you and to make sense of that in the real world and in the application of it. And that's the final one. I quite like this one just because it has this idea of like fusing the two worlds.
Well, you know, context is everything because, you know, you say X in the wrong context, you can get arrested, and you say X in the right context and you're a hero. So you've got to build the context. And I think contextual intelligence is a great like term to develop. You know, I was watching this video about this guy who was saying, delayed honesty is very important. And you're saying, so if somebody comes off a play and they've asked you to go watch it and you think it was the terriblest, shittest play ever, you don't tell the person it was shit right after the play. You contextualize your honesty. And so you only tell them you delay it because it's contextually going to hurt them. So, you know, delayed honesty is also a contextual way of communicating because you want to be sensitive, you know? I also learned in my marriage that 100% honesty is not necessary. you're going to hurt somebody. You don't have to say everything. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. So very good. Contextual.
That nuance.
Yeah, it's such a light nuance. So great. Thank you. Yeah. Soft skills. So we had communication. We had contextual intelligence. What were the others? Adaptability.
Adaptability. We had collaboration. Collaboration. And then we had creativity.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Loved it. Great education. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. And as usual, as now we've got this new flow to our podcast, we have a quote of the week that we like to sign out on. And this week's quote comes from Rumi. And the quote is, live your life as if everything is rigged in your favor. It's one of my favorite quotes that I kind of remind myself of every time I feel somebody's kicking me in my nuts. I'm like, where is this? Where is this doing me good in the long run? What is it teaching me? And it comes down to the same idea of when you step out of your story and you can identify the the mentors and the protagonists and all these people, what you're actually doing is you're seeing it from not inside the story, but from on top of the story. And then you can actually really start to have a good eagle's point of view of how to live your life like everything is rigged in your favor. So as we close off with that, Eric, any closing comments before I close off and wrap up?
No, thank you. I've enjoyed the pod. I think it's a very relevant topic for people to be thinking about and to be actively working towards. You know, it's all great and well to listen to a pod like this and go, yes, these are the soft skills that I need. But it's a very different thing to go and put them into practice and to start identifying and coming back to what you were saying, the biggest skill that kind of encapsulates all of them is self-awareness. And so for you to have the self-awareness to realize that these are the areas where I need to go and improve and work on, knowing that in years to come, and even today, my soft skills are what's going to determine my success and the future of my career. Having that awareness means that you can go and do the work, and doing the work is what ultimately gives you the result. So don't stop at just listening to a pod.
Yes, well said. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. If you're watching this on YouTube, please do give us a follow. If you're listening to this on any podcast platform, do please give us a star rating if you are enjoying it. Also, please comment below any of the episodes. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. Tell us what more you'd like to see from us. We'd love to hear it. This is a collaborative process, so do let us know what else you'd like us to focus on. We really do enjoy the feedback. Until next week, ciao.